This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I have a special guest this time. I could talk actually to Chris about a lot of subjects. He's a drummer, but we are not going to talk about music. He has done a lot of other things, like even for industrial kind of market, doing engineering work, programming work. He has been UX, UI designer, content developer, a variety of things. None of those we will discuss today, but what we wanted to really ask him about is what is very dear and near to his heart, that is really about messaging, especially helping entrepreneurs to really come up with the right message. And we will learn more, why does it matter, how does it work, and what does it take to really do that. So let me just ask Chris to introduce himself, tell us a little bit about himself and what he does. Chris, welcome to SaaS Scale.
Hey, Armon, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, so what I do at Conversion Alchemy is we are a messaging strategy and conversion copywriting agency, a small agency for B2B SaaS companies. And we mostly help companies that are kind of lost in the noise and struggle to differentiate themselves or to express how different they are. We help them crystallize that value, understand their customers, and kind of make their value impossible to ignore, we say, which is mostly for their website copy, emails, and sales collateral. So all of the kind of conversion assets, those assets that are as close as possible to the conversion, whether it's a sign up or booking a demo. So all of those is what we help our clients with.
Fantastic. So how does it look like from your perspective when someone comes to you and say, hey, I need your help? Normally, what is the situation on the other side?
Yeah, so I have a very first example just because I was wrapping up a project with the client. And in most cases, it's either their marketing person or sometimes the founder. If it's a smaller company, typically my clients are between teams of 20 to 200 companies, so small, medium. And a lot of the times they come to me saying, we want to improve the copy or increase conversions here because we see lower conversion or high bounce rates, right? But what I'm seeing then, that then we also dive deeper into once we start the project or even at the proposal stage, is that they actually have kind of a breaking point in one of the higher up areas, whether it's positioning strategy, messaging strategy, and then consequently the copyright. Because I think if you don't have those foundations in place first, then your copy is never going to be as good as it can. So typically, yeah, it's kind of like a lack of being able to, not being able to differentiate themselves or to express it. But then also there's the root cause, which is the strategy has never been solidified or crystallized.
So you arrive after they philosophically know what they are supposed to do. If there has been some surgeries, they already have been done. They are post-recovery. And then you come in and say, okay, let me fine-tune everything. Because if you are not putting the right words there, the impact of your message is really not as great as you think, right? And then you work with the marketing team and the founder and say, this is really something that is authentic and original to what you do, and this is really impactful as well, and this is the way you should explain it. Now, tell us, I mean, tell us some stories about the kind of impact you have seen before you arrive and after you did it. What was the impact?
Yeah, so a lot of times what happens is as a result of not knowing how to express themselves or not having a clarified strategy, they basically start writing the copy for new pages. Every time everything's different, there's lack of consistency. They don't really have clear messaging pillars. So what are the key themes that they need to hit that resonate with their audience? Those are constantly changing. So it's kind of a bit of a chaos in the way that they express themselves, which also doesn't only affect those conversion assets, but also your content, right? Because messaging pillars typically also guide your content. So it affects the whole funnel at the end of the day, because strategy dictates everything else. And a couple of use cases or examples, I work with some private equity firms that acquire tech companies. And so for them, typically, we kind of need to do the whole go-to-market strategy or help them at least or support them with that. And so in this case, for example, it was a European company, I think, and their website was completely basically written by the founder. And so like imagine a founder writing a website copy, which is all about their vision, kind of being a bit like going counter some of the myths and misconception in the industry. So trying to be polarizing as well, which was fine maybe when you have to go and do like very high touch deals when you're the founder, you are having those conversations. But when it comes to having to scale those deals and having a sales team that does those, it becomes harder, right? So you need messaging and copy that can actually do the work for you at scale and for your team. So what we did there was going back to the drawing board, researching their customers. They also had partners, technology partners. So we needed to research and understand the two sides of the equation there, the competitors, how their product differentiated and how it positioned themselves. A big part of the work that I do is also conducting positioning workshops. So we have the whole team together, whether it's on live, in person or on webcam, and just discuss openly and transparently, okay, what do we do, who we do it for, and how do we do it uniquely, differently, or better, right? And what are those 3 to 4 differentiated capabilities that only we have together as a combination that make us different? And on that front, I can tell you a lot of times there's a lot of discussions between team members or between marketing founder, between the ones that you should promote versus the ones that are already been promoted. So that's a strong sync point that we have that actually sets the foundation for everything that comes after. And then also the messaging. So how do you start saying that positioning? How do you start expressing that positioning? So that comes down to understanding your strategic narrative, point of view, creating variants for your sales pitch, jotting down those key messaging pillars that then you're going to expand with your copy. And so that was a big job as far as bringing all the teams together and also the private equity firm guys, which were kind of guiding the operations. And then finally creating assets which were, in that case, sales collaterals for different customer personas and the full website copy, which was around 20 pages to start. And so that kind of gave them a system both for being able to conduct that research again in the future in case they needed to refresh or reposition or launch new features. They had a system now. Okay, these are the things that we can do to find out these things that then can help us with these messaging items. And also they already had assets tailored for specific personas, for specific intent and different funnel stages that could help them, especially with this new go-to-market after the acquisition, right? So that was a fresh example as well. I have others, but pretty much this is kind of how the process goes. I jump in. There's typically a situation and work that's been done a bit haphazardly. we come in, we reopen the box, and we kind of revisit their audience, their market, and also internally the team. And then we craft that strategy and the copy.
Okay. So let's say I'm a SaaS company, a B2B SaaS company, and I have gone through different steps and stages to get where I am. But when I am at the very pre-revenue stage, I have only one or two customers just started. That's a stage A. And then I get to a stage B and I have 50 customers, a few millions of dollars, maybe ARR. So maybe a little bit I have proven myself that I have something that people want. So they are paying me $2-3 million per year. And the product market fit is kind of a little bit at that point proven. And then I get to about 10 million ARR. And at that stage, then I have more established customers, maybe 200, 300. And then which of these stages is the stage that makes it possible for you to be very impactful? I wonder if you really rely on customers and the profile of customers, and you need that. So maybe a stage A is too early to start doing what you do. And maybe a stage C is the best stage, or maybe at that point is done, or maybe a stage B. So if you can a little bit explain about, when would be the best time from timing perspective to do this kind of messaging?
That's a great question. And so most of my clients typically are closer to that C stage, right? So they already have customers. We jump in, we do the whole research. We truly understand them. We align teams, which is one of the areas that they are having kind of issues with, lack of alignment as well. But so that's I think where we can have the highest impact. But I think even I typically work also with Series A, B, right? A bit higher, a bit earlier. And I think our impact there is a bit different. It's still impactful, but in the sense that we help them establish the foundation. So, for example, a lot of my research starts from, like, you don't even have to have customers to do this kind of research, right? What are the things that are available? Maybe you have a couple of conversations that you've recorded, initial sales conversations, or there are reviews online, or there are competitor websites, or maybe you are starting having support chat transcripts with initial users. All of those things, you can start collecting those and start coming up with kind of those messaging pillars and your positioning, or at least like a very early draft of those to get you started. And now with AI, there's also different techniques. There's synthetic research, which is one that I'm diving in a lot, which is using AI to simulate your potential customers. There are already a couple of platforms that do it for you, but you can do it internally. And so I think there's now, especially now with a lot of automation and AI, there's a lot of opportunity for early stages companies to get up to speed to their audience, to their market, and to start at least coming up with copy that's maybe not 100% where it needs to be, but if it's a 70%, 60%, it's a good starting point that you can iterate on rather than stalling and never getting anywhere, right?
Sure. So let's say it is more the question, maybe I should crystallize it a little bit and explain it differently, that there is a point that as a founder, you know that you have the product market fit. Before than that, you are pivoting probably to get there. If you're lucky, maybe the first, thing you thought about it and you did it, it worked, right? But in many cases, founders need to be flexible and listen to the market and listen to customers and tweak it a little bit and pivot if needed until they get to the point that, okay, now it works. Now I can go to market and offer something that market wants, and I generate revenue and add customers, paid customers. Now, before, as a founder, I get to that point, I may say, that's not my highest priority to go and fine-tune messaging because I may change it next month, right? Because I'm in that kind of pivoting moment. I'm just trying to figure out what is. But after I get to that point, after I see that every quarter continuously, consistently, I'm just signing up customers, then that may become a kind of priority for me. In general, thinking about messaging and fine-tuning the messaging, would you agree that that's the order of kind of, you know, get things done and priorities?
Yeah, totally agree. So first, you obviously, most of my clients already have product market fit, right? So that should be your priority. Still, it doesn't mean that you can't launch MVP messaging done the right way rather than just guessing. At least start collecting some of the data and start getting those processes in place, especially because once you have a like a repeatable research system, then it gets easier. Once it's already kind of installed inside your business, once marketing knows when to collect feedback, or you already have automatic survey launching in your systems, then it's already easier to start collecting data once you get more customers. So yeah, get the product market fit first, obviously, and then message market fit once you already have that.
I wonder if you have ever encountered this particular situation, that you get into a company, you look at what the messaging is, and then you realize that actually what the customers are asking and what market sometimes is asking is slightly different. And then in your belief, you come back to the company and say, this is my research, this is what market wants. It's slightly different from what you do and what you say. There's a slight difference there. And if you tweak it this way, then you get much closer to really what market is asking you, and customers even sometimes are asking you to do. And then either the founder or some other people in the company would tell you that it's not what we do, it's not our DNA, it's not really authentic to what we actually do. And if you say so, we are just faking it. So no, we are not going to do it. And you say, hey guys, this is really great. I mean, this is an opportunity not too far from you. You can't really go and get there. It's just a little bit tweaking. And they say, no, that's not our interest. It's not us. We are not going to do it. Have you encountered that situation at all, or maybe often?
Luckily, I haven't encountered a situation where the company disagrees with the research. So whenever I bring in research, they tend to like trust it, especially if I show the methodology, if I share the interview transcript, the recording, like they can hear from customers the words that I bring them, right? So they kind of know. But it happened that the research found some data and insight that kind of went against what they believed was their trajectory, right? Or their messaging or their positioning. So with this, for example, with this data integration and quality solution, they basically had a platform, so data quality and integration, but also services, kind of consulting services. And what they thought that the platform provided, first, they used to call themselves platform, not a solution, which kind of made it sound like it was strictly a software platform without any of the actual services and iTouch stuff. So that was probably the first mistake that we realized that their customer actually valued. They value the services and the consultancy work behind it. But also the fact that the company thought that they were basically solving a data architecture problem. So they thought, okay, we are starting to work with this company, we're gonna replace their entire data architecture and replace it with our product, right? But what their customers actually valued and wanted from them was to solve a very specific measurable data problem. So they had, I don't know, their marketing, for example, realized that they had duplicates in their email list or in their CRM. That was the signal and the trigger that then caused their IT people to contact the company and ask them, hey, we have this very specific problem. Can you help us? And one of the benefits and advantages that this data company had was that it could plug itself very flexibly inside other systems and actually solve the very specific aimed problem. And so we brought these insights to leadership. And they realized it's actually true. Like all of our customers are actually solving very specific problems. They are not reinventing their entire data architecture. And so this is how we should position and message ourselves, just because we realized our best fit customers value this specific point and this specific framing, right? So yeah, that was a very good example, I think. And it happens It happens not always, but a lot of times, because I think especially with companies where the founder has a strong opinion, strong point of view, I think sometimes that kind of clouds their judgment, especially if they don't do a lot of immersion customer research. And so we act as kind of their sounding board, kind of a mirror for customers and for their audience.
That's great. And I know that there are two main parts to what you do. One part is research, and one part is, of course, the messaging itself, to really work on, you know, the messaging. And you explained to me that on both sides, you have been able to leverage the new technologies, AI-related technologies, to actually, you know, make it more efficient and make it more impactful. Can you explain for the audience on either side, research as well as creating the content? How do you really work with AI? How does AI help you?
Yeah, so for research, that's typically where I start, right? And it's 70% of my process typically, just because once the research is done, the foundation is done, then the copy almost writes itself and the strategy comes as a consequence. But I always like to start, when it comes to AI and research, with platforms that have a big context window. So the context window is kind of the space that the AI, temporary memory that AI has to work with when you chat with it, right? For example, think of Gemini or ChatGPT or Claude. I like to start with something like Gemini, just because they have the biggest context window, I think, which is 2 million tokens. So it's great. It's a great place to start when you have a lot of interview transcripts, lots of data to analyze. So it can keep into consideration all of that and give you quite good insights and results. And you start seeing the patterns, the themes. So that's pretty handy. Then as I go through my different stages, which is research, positioning, messaging, copy, I start to narrow down and use models that are much better at the actual synthesis and the actual writing, right? So I might switch to something like ChatGPT or Claude and create projects inside those LLMs with all the research that we conducted, the insights extrapolated using Gemini. And so we create kind of a knowledge base, the context that they need. In fact, I think we are at a very interesting point now where you don't really need to be a prompt engineer anymore to get good results. In fact, there's this new term called context engineering now, which is basically one of the most important things right now, is actually being able to feed the right context and the right content to the AI at the right time. So as you go through your process and your systems, what does the LLM need at this stage to being able to give you the best results, right? So I think that's probably a very good opportunity once you have this research process down the right way, so that you can just, you basically know, okay, if I give this input to the AI, then the output is going to be pretty good. And finally, what I like to do for my clients as well, but also for my team to scale operations, I like to use for the writing part, I like to use the API, the Claude's API. First, because we kind of bypass the limits, which when you have to write a lot of copy, can be pretty annoying. And so with the API and third-party platforms, you can skip those limits, but you can also collaborate with people. So we use chats, like collaboration chats, where we can write the same copy using the same messaging frameworks that we have shared in our project knowledge. So that's super helpful. And also for me to be able to share those with my clients, so then once I'm gone, they can basically recreate the work that I've been doing for them, right? Using the same research, same strategy, they don't have to reinvent the wheel and they can extend the work that I've done. So yeah, I think to recap, I like to think in first, start with the broader, slightly lower quality for the research and analysis. It doesn't take a lot of intelligence there. But then as you start fine-tuning and moving through the strategy and the writing, then use better models, more intelligent models. And finally, the shared models with API to being able to collaborate and scale.
Nice. And then do you see, in the near future, in the next year or two, to be in a situation that maybe you can use these models to actually you know, look at everything that company does and the model evolve itself to become one of their customers, essentially. So they can really treat it like a real customers they have and then go there and just ask questions, or a real prospect, I would say, in some cases, because this model is looking at all of the prospects coming and all of the discussion and can really say, hey, what kind of prospect do you want me to be? Because you have five categories based on my understanding, and then, you know, ask you some question and then play that role for you. So that makes a huge kind of difference. It's very helpful if I can speak with my prospect and ask any questions, because not every prospect is open to really answer any questions I might have, right? So that helps me as a business to really gain insight and grow fast.
Yeah. The synthetic research is it's a kind of trending and growing topic, I think. I've been interesting and looking into it for last year and a half or so. I used to create these synthetic AI personas on my own, so basically feeding real research to the AI and then asking it, okay, wear the shoes of this customer without breaking character, also maybe give me your thoughts in a thought bracket so that I can kind of see what he's thinking before giving me the response. And it was actually great to get that 60-70% accuracy. Maybe that's already good for launching copy and maybe to test hypothesis or test messaging angles, or even just to go deeper into the objections, for example, or pain points. It was great. The only thing, if doing it yourself, which now a lot of synthetic research platforms help with, it's the scale. So if you want to, I don't know, you have three personas, right? You have the CTO, you have the CMO, and the IT person. So if it's just yourself creating these, then you're going to have maybe three personas. Maybe let's say you create two or three of each in different chats. It becomes a bit, there's a lot of work involved, right? So these platforms, what they help you do, it's they, I don't know, create 50 copies, but they also variate them for you. So they vary for them for you. So you have 50 CTOs, 50 CMOs, and as many as you want with different little variations that represent your demographic, firmographic, and psychographic of your customers. So in that way, you are able to cover way more statistical variability inside your personas, right? So it's much more accurate. And also, a lot of these platforms have algorithms that kind of cover and map real biases that you might not be able to recreate on your own. So there's a lot of different nuances involved. But I think we are already at a pretty good stage now, where especially for B2B, which is probably where it's most, where it's hardest to collect this data, just because even sometimes I struggle with my clients to get interviews with CMOs, with executives or CTOs. So a lot of these platforms, especially in B2B, help you cover those gaps and help you launch faster or test hypotheses faster and cheaper, right? So we're already at a pretty good stage, and there are different, I think, opportunities and ways to create these. So there's pure synthetic data, which is basically you just ask some of these platforms or your AI to basically use their internet knowledge and create a mirror of your customers, of your personas, which for B2B is probably the least reliable. Then there's like partially synthetic personas, which is basically you use kind of real research and ask it to expand. And then there are augmented persona, which is using your real research, real data, then you create twins of your customers and then scale them, like create hundreds of them so that you have the actual scale. And there are a couple of platforms. I tried a couple of ones. For me, they come in handy when we are at the stage where before launching the copy or after we launched it to create iterations. There are some platforms that even allow you to play with their APIs, where, for example, you have 4, 5, 10 ads variant that you're about to launch on LinkedIn, Facebook, right? Their API, what it does is before even launching your ad, it tests it against your personas and it gives you the best of those variants. And then you automatically launch the best variant on those ad platforms, right? So it's kind of like a constant optimization loop that happens. And I think it's a pretty good opportunity, especially if you maybe you don't have the funds to waste launching ads constantly and optimize there. You can optimize in the background and then launch the best variations.
Great. Thank you for the insight. Before I ask my last question, I would like to ask a totally non-relevant, fun question from you. I know that you have been traveling a lot, and out of all the cities that you have seen already, if you had 2 weeks of vacation in this September, which one of them would you go and spend time there?
Interesting. So I wouldn't say Italy, where I'm from, just because it's hot as hell, so I'm not going to go there. But I really liked Thailand. I was in Thailand I used to spend the whole month of October in Thailand, just because there are a couple of conferences there. I have a couple of friends. And it's a very nice vibe, especially if you're places like Chiang Mai and you're close to the jungle. It's very nice because you have a lot of the kind of modernity. It's like really nice to work from cafes. Coffee is great. But you also have the jungle, right, like next to you, and you can go on excursions. So it's very nice. So I probably say Chiang Mai, Thailand.
Okay, we have a winner here. So that's great. Thank you. And now my last question. What would be your recommendation to the audience as far as a book is concerned that either personally or professionally you liked?
So the first one that comes to mind is Alchemy by Rory Sutherland. And he is the chairman at Ogilvy Advertising Agency. And Alchemy is basically what gave part of my agency name as well. So Conversion Alchemist comes from that book, basically. And the idea behind the book is that context is everything. So understanding as much as possible about your audience, how they think, and also that what people say is often not what they mean. So kind of unpacking, extracting meaning from how people think and how make decisions. So it's a very counterintuitive, creative book. So highly recommended. And if I can say another one, it's probably, I don't know if how many people know it. It's called The User Illusion. And it's by this guy, Torrentrandes. It's like a bit of a weird name, but if you search The User Illusion, you'll find it. And it's about consciousness and how communicating to other people, it's mostly about removing information. And the information that remains is that actual meaning that you want to convey, right? So it's all about how much work is behind communicating to other people. He calls it unpacking meaning. So that people have a lot of work typically to do to understand you, because they have to understand all the information that you removed from the information they are conveying. So that's very insightful, a bit hard to read, but super insightful, and really change the way that I think about consciousness and understanding how we communicate.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for sharing with us your insight as well as the books. It was a great discussion, conversation. Thank you for joining us, Chris.
Thank you so much for having me, Herman.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Arman Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to sasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.